But here, a group of young men believed liberation was possible and achieved the unthinkable. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
The British government is facing calls to press for the freedom of a young woman imprisoned in Saudi Arabia over her use of Twitter. Salma Al-Shahab, the 34-year-old mother of two, is a Saudi national who lived and studied in Britain before her arrest whilst visiting family inside Saudi Arabia in January 2021. Salma's original sentence was just 3 years. But earlier this month, an appeals court extended her term, sentencing her to 34 years in prison, followed by a 34-year travel ban.
What's Salma's crime, you may ask? Just a series of Twitter posts and retweets, all of content critical of the Saudi regime. Her sentence is thought to be one of the longest ever doled out by the Saudi authorities against a female human rights activist inside the kingdom.
Activists and lawyers consider her lengthy jail sentence as shocking and outrageous, even by Saudi standards of justice. An opposition Labour MP, Hilary Benn, confirmed via a Twitter post he has sent a letter to Foreign Secretary and Tory leadership hopeful Liz Truss, demanding her intervention to help free the jailed student. As earlier this year, Truss declined to criticise the kingdom for its poor human rights record, saying Riyadh is an important partner of the UK. Critics express concern over not only Saudi rights abuses, but Western countries' double standards too.
I don't think the UK has that much influence at all if Liz Truss is going to try her hand. Of course, what we are seeing is the usual Western double standards. Only a few days before this horrific prison sentence was issued, Joe Biden was standing up for Salman Rushdie and saying that he had a right to free speech, and this was very much part of American values. But obviously those American values don't extend to Salma Al-Shahab.
Ever since Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman became Saudi Arabia's de facto leader in 2017, the kingdom has become even more intolerant of any internal criticism and activism, jailing activists, bloggers, intellectuals, and others for their political activism. International condemnation has done little to stop Saudi's behaviour, including the brutal killing of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Istanbul in 2018. Robert Carter, London.
Iran's foreign minister's trip to Mali has come to an end. Amir Abdullahian and his Malian counterpart, Abdoulaye Diop, hailed their meeting as constructive, hoping that their negotiations would help develop bonds of friendship between the two nations.
We made an agreement with Mali's foreign minister and the head of the country's transitional government to take big steps in the coming months in various areas, including the activities of knowledge-based companies and transfer of technology in this field, as well as defense cooperation to help boost peace, stability, and security in this country.
Both sides are more dedicated than ever to taking the next steps to deepen ties.
The trip to Mali marked Amir Abdullahian's first visit to an African nation during his time in office as Iran's foreign minister. He then departed Bamako for his next destination, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania's largest city, an industrial hub which is home to the country's main port. Upon arrival at Dar es Salaam's international airport, Tanzanian foreign minister Liberata Mulla Mulla warmly welcomed his Iranian counterpart.
We are delighted to have this high-level visit. And while he's here, I know His Excellency has only a few days, but we'd like him to see Tanzania and be able to visit Zanzibar and visit the capital. So we are really excited. We are also excited that he's coming with the business group. So we'll have a business forum. So we want also to thank the ambassador here for organizing this. So to you all, we say karibu sana.
Amir Abdullahian, for his part, thanked his counterpart for hosting the top diplomat and his accompanying delegation, as well as governmental and private sector representatives.
There are lots of opportunities for developing Iran-Tanzania relations, particularly in the fields of mining and energy. Iran's top diplomat will take part in a business forum and also visit the country's top officials to explore potential for boosting bilateral cooperation. Mahdi Abbasian, Darussalam.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. This is Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio is a guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Hujjatul Islam Academy. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh Karimi, and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
For today's question, we want to talk about the role that the Persians had in helping Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and whether the Persians, especially after the tragedy of Karbala, who were part of the revenge group of Mukhtar al-Saghafi, had the chance to help Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the story of Karbala or not. Before anything, I would like to say that the great Persia at that time and Iraq were one land, and geographically speaking, we did not have geographical borders like we have today. So the Persians, or the Mawalis as they call it, they were not Arab originally, but because they were living in the, we can say, under the Arab governorship and rulership, somehow they attached themselves to a famous Arab tribe. That's why they were called Mawalis. Let's get to this question, Shaykh. Did the Persians did not find a chance to help Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam? They were not aware of this story because the leader of the tribes were Arab and they were not sensitive about the case? Or what was the story?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First of all, there is a difference when it comes to the tragedy of Karbala and the army of Mukhtar.
Yes.
Mukhtar, officially speaking, he began a war against those oppressive people who killed Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So people came to know that there is a kind of uprising by Mukhtar. So many people had the chance to join his army, including, as you rightly mentioned, Mawadi or the non-Arabs,
yes,
which at that time referred to many Iranians as well. So we have many Persians who had the chance to join the army of Mukhtar at that time. But when it comes to the tragedy of Karbala, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, when he's going out of the city of Medina, he's not going to a war, practically speaking.
Yes.
So he's not announcing that, oh, people, please come and help me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to a war with Yazid. I'm preparing an army. So let all the people who want to help me, help me.
Okay.
And then Imam goes to Mecca, and then he's invited by the people of Kufa. So that is why, as I mentioned, there is a difference between the two. So the Imam doesn't ask for all the people to join him.
Yes.
And that is why he's only accompanied by his family members and some of his companions and some of the people who, gradually speaking, joined the caravan of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam on the way from
Medina to Karbala.
From Mecca to Karbala,
yes,
or Kufa.
Okay.
So that is why we shouldn't think that, all the people who wanted to join could join the army of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, because it was not mentioned officially that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is going to a war.
Yes.
So this is one point.
Okay.
The second point is that According to some reports, there were some Mawalis present in the tragedy of Karbala as well. Yes. They were not many, of course. We are talking about less than 100 people with Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And that is why we cannot claim that so many Persians joined the Imam. Yes. But according to some historical reports, some Mawali were present in this tragedy as well. And yes. Mawali is referring to non-Arab people, including the Persians at that time.
Can we name, for example, Salim ibn Umar? Salim?
He's called Aslam ibn Am, yes, according to some historical reports.
Yes.
And of course, I mean, for I'm just quoting some of the scholars, yes, who mentioned some names, and they believe that they were among the Mawali, mm-hmm, and they were present in the tragedy of Karbala.
Okay,
so right. Aslam ibn Amr is one of them, and he was with the caravan Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Even his Rajas, his poem before, yes, I mean, fighting the enemies, is mentioned in the sources, okay, and finally he is martyred in the tragedy of, yes, Karbala. The next name is Rafi ibn Abdullah.
Yes.
His name is mentioned mainly by the books written after the book Bahar al-Anwar by Allama Maylisi and in some other sources. I'm not claiming that for sure all these people, yes, were present. There are, yes, some debates among the historians, but the, okay, point is that these names as Mawali, as non-Arab people, are mentioned in the sources, yes, as the people who were present. So we shouldn't think that, yes, no Persian was present in the tragedy of Karbala.
But originally speaking, it is documented that Persians had the love for Ahlul Bayt.
Yeah.
From the time of Prophet Muhammad Salman of Farsi, who was also a truthful companion of Imam Ali alayhi salam, you know, this is really important. And all the following generation of the Persians who were beside Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and the other infallible Imam, this love was present on
but
that
we time. Shouldn't think that the Persians, the majority of, yes, the Persians, yes, had this love from day one. No,
yes,
gradually speaking,
yes,
in Persia, the love for the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam,
yes,
increased.
Was established, yes.
Flip side is, what if I am Shia? If we are weeping for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, we're good and lover of Ahlul Bayt. That's enough. We know it's necessary for salvation, but is it enough or not? This is the question. One of the companions of the Imam goes to him and says to him, there are some who consider the harams not to be haram. And they say that the religion equals ma'rifah, just to know. Know that this is your Imam and so on, that's enough for you. So do whatever you like. After you know the Imam, do whatever you like. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. They have misinterpreted, they have done a false ta'wil of what has been said. When I said, have ma'rifa of the Imam, know the Imam, acknowledge the Imam and the wilayah of the Imam, do whatever you like, you're good to go. What I meant was, do whatever you like of ta'ah and obedience of Allah and ibadah. Because if you do, since you have the condition for the acceptance, it will be accepted from you. This is what I meant. Because Allah doesn't accept from someone who does something without the ma'rifah of us Ahlul Bayt. In other words, it's necessary, but is it enough or not? No, it's not enough. And then he goes on to say, if someone does all the good deeds in the world and fasts the whole life and stays awake all the nights and prays and so on and so forth, but doesn't know his Prophet who brought these fara'id, who brought these rulings, these wajibat and muharramat, he brought them, and doesn't know his Imam of his time, that Allah has made it wajib on you to follow, then his amal will not be accepted. This is what I meant. Yeah.
The next name in this list is Zahir ibn Amr al-Kindi. The next one is called Firuzan. According to some sources, he's one of the Iranians, one of the Persian companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, who was martyred on the land of Karbala. The next is Nasr ibn Abi Nazar. So the second point is that this is not true to claim that no Persian person was present in the tragedy of Karbala.
Even according to some resources, the wife of Imam al-Hussein was originally Persian, isn't it?
Those people who believe in that, historical
background,
story about Shah Banu,
yes,
they believe that, she was an Iranian person.
Yes. But all in all, after the tragedy of Karbala took place, the Persians were present at least in Mukhtar al-Saqafi, isn't it? Army and so many famous commanders of his army were Persians. Yeah. They were really helpful.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay.
I mean, the army of Mukhtar for sure included some people from Persia. And one of the reasons is that, let me refer to another point, and the point is that at that time, at the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the Mawali are not taken seriously by the people. And by the rulers. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam does not, as I mentioned, does not announce and ask people before going out of the city of Medina or Mecca for people to come and join him. But when it comes to the time of Mukhtar, Mukhtar comes and respects to Mawadi as well. Yes. So at that time, it was unfortunately common among the Umayyad caliphs to take the Mawali as the second citizen or the third citizen.
Yes.
But this is not true about Mukhtar.
Mm-hmm.
Mukhtar pays attention to all the people who want to join his army and to take revenge from the enemies of Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Yes.
And maybe this is one of the few occasions in which the Mawali come to know that they can also play a role.
Mm-hmm.
And they are taken seriously by a person like Mukhtar. And that is why we have many people, and one of them are among the commanders of the army of Mukhtar. So, as I mentioned, we need to pay attention to all these points.
Yes.
As I mentioned, first of all, according to some, at the end of the day, the companions of the Imam Hussein alayhi salam were about 70 people.
Yes.
So we cannot imagine that so many Persians could have been present in the tragedy of Karbala. No, they were only few people. And the Imam did not announce, officially speaking, and asking for help for all his companions coming from different corners of the world, including the great Persia of that time. No, it didn't happen.
No.
As I mentioned, the companions of the Imam joined him, some of them from Medina, some from Mecca, and some on the way. So the Imam is not officially announcing that I'm going to a war. And also, I said and referred to the fact that having said that, some historical sources talk about few Persians who were present in that tragedy of Karbala. So if these stories are true, the conclusion is that this is a wrong assumption to think that no Persian was present at that time. No, according to some historical reports, there were few people, and we refer to some of the names.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Karimi, for a nice elaboration regarding the presence of the Persians among the army of Mukhtar al-Saqafi, who took revenge for Imam al-Hussein's martyrdom from the great Afghanzi oppressors to the rights of Imam al-Hussein and the Ahlul Bayt. It was very kind of you.
My pleasure.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. To another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the charitable nature of Aba Abdullah alayhi salam. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome everyone. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano, and in today's lesson, we're going to talk about the charitable nature of Aba Abdullah alayhi salam. The quality of charity was so in the blood of Aba Abdullah alayhi salam that everyone during his lifetime, during the time when he was the leader, he was imam, used to love him a lot. He helped a lot. He helped the needy. He used to help everyone who needed help from him without asking and without considering that he's from the bad side, he's his follower or he's not his follower. He was helping them. I'd like to report one of a few happenings that took place during his lifetime that shows us that Al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam had a charitable nature. He liked helping people. To one of his maids, Anas has narrated that he was with the holy Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, you know, with a container of perfume and presented it to the Imam alayhi salam. Now, His Eminence Imam Hussein alayhi salam told her, "You are free for the sake of Allah." Anas was so astonished and he asked, "Maid, get you a container of perfume and you have emancipated her? You've left her free just because of of one perfume, of a single perfume. His Eminence Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam said, "The Almighty Allah has taught us in this manner. The Almighty Allah says, whenever someone wishes you, you must reply in a better way or return that same greeting. And better than that was making her free, letting her go." Now, by these lofty manners and great benevolence, he captured the hearts of Muslims and they became devoted to his love and guardianship. They loved him for the act of charity. Thank you so much for listening. We're coming back in a few minutes.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. Now, in this program, in this episode, we're talking about the charitable nature of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. He had this nature in him. He used to help everyone who came to him for the need. And he used to give more. If in cases whereby he had the chance to give more, he gave more. I would like to report about something, about a happening that took place during his lifetime. Let's report about the second happening that took place during the life of Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam that shows his charitable nature. To a borrower, one day, someone who was borrowing from him, one day after the martyrdom of his brother, Al-Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba, Imam Hussein alayhi salam was sitting in a corner in the mosque of the Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Abdullah bin Zubair and Utbah bin Abi Sufyan were also sitting in a corner of the mosque, the same mosque. Now, a Bedouin arrived on a camel. He tethered his camel and entered the mosque. Then he approached Utbah bin Abi Sufyan and saluted him. He returned the greeting and the Bedouin said, you know, he was a traveler, "I have killed the son of my uncle, cousin, and blood money is being demanded from me. Would you give me something?" He was borrowing from Utbah bin Abi Sufyan. So he asked him, "Would you give me something?" Utbah raised his head and ordered his servants to pay him 100 dirhams. The Bedouin said, "I do not want anything less than the full amount of the blood money." Utbah did not pay any attention to him, and the Bedouin went away from before him, dejected, and came to Ibn Zubayr and told him his problem, and he ordered that 200 dirhams be given to him. But the Bedouin, the borrower, the guy who was traveling, the traveler refused and went towards Imam Hussein and informed the Holy Imam about his requirements. So His Eminence ordered that they pay 10,000 dirhams to the man and told him, "This amount is for you to pay off your debts," and ordered that another 10,000 dirhams be given to him, and he said, "This is for you to make arrangements for your upkeep and to improve your living conditions and spend the amount on your family." He was really overjoyed at this, and he recited the following couplet: "Never any fragrance reached me, nor was I involved in a love relationship, yet I became enchanted." He never met such love from anyone during his lifetime. This is just but an example of how charitable Al-Imam Al-Husseini was, and we can learn a lot out of his life. Thank you so much for listening. Until next episode, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be left tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. And deep silence fill the air.
In the limelight.
They are counting on that small investment in anti-tax Republicans to save them billions in taxes, said Americans for Tax Fairness, which conducted the analysis. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Kenny Stencil, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Just 27 Billionaires Have Spent $90 Million to Buy GOP Congress, a report shows. Here's the story. A few dozen billionaires are spending tens of millions of dollars on the 2022 midterm elections, mostly to support Republican candidates, including many who have parroted the dangerous lie that the 2020 presidential election was stolen, in a bid to ensure that Congress is full of lawmakers willing to make their wealthy benefactors even richer, according to a fresh analysis. Titled Billionaires Buying Elections, the report from Americans for Tax Fairness, ATF, details how billionaires are increasingly using their personal fortunes and the profits of connected corporations to drown out regular voters' voices and elect hand-picked candidates who fed or rig the nation's economy, especially the tax system. A pair of super PACs tasked with securing Republican majorities in the House and Senate, the Congressional Leadership Fund, CLF, and the Senate Leadership Fund, SLF, raised a combined $188.3 million through the first 16 months of the 2022 campaign cycle, according to ATF. Nearly half, $89.4 million, or 48%, came from just 27 billionaires. A whopping 86% of the GOP's billionaire money came from Wall Street tycoons, who are arguably the biggest beneficiaries of glaring loopholes in the tax code. The Democratic counterparts of those two super PACs, the House Majority PAC and the Senate Majority PAC, raised a combined $154 million over the same time period. Smaller share, $25.8 million, or 17%, came from 19 billionaires. A majority of billionaire contributions to Democratic candidates also came from the finance and investment sector, about 35%, but other industries were also well represented, including cryptocurrency, 26%, and tech, 18%. Unlike candidates and party committees, super PACs can raise unlimited donations from individuals and corporations, ATF explained. In return, they are not supposed to coordinate activities with the campaigns they support, but instead act independently, though that rule is often flouted. Top billionaire donors to congressional super PACs include hedge fund magnate Ken Griffin, who has given more than $28.5 million to CLF and SLF, and private equity mogul Stephen Schwarzman, who has pumped $20 million into GOP's super PACs. Anti-democratic vote buying, ATF wrote, has been facilitated by and is facilitating the accelerating wealth growth of the billionaire class and the record profits of the corporations they won. The combined net worth of the nation's roughly 750 billionaires surged by $2 trillion, or 70%, during the first 2 years of the COVID-19 pandemic. The collective wealth of the 27 billionaires bankrolling the GOP super PACs alone soared by $82.4 billion over that time period, meaning that the $89.4 million they have donated to CLF and SLF constitutes less than 0.1% of their overall pandemic-era gains. Meanwhile, the return on that modest investment could amount to billions of dollars if Republicans take back Congress in November and preserve their 2017 tax cuts or further slash taxes on super-rich people and the corporations they won. Over a recent 9-year period, the 400 wealthiest people in the U.S. paid an average effective federal income tax rate of just 8.2% when the increased value of their stock holdings is included in their income. That is a lower rate than the nationwide average of 13.3% in 2019. As ATF explained, focusing on contributions to congressional super PACs fails to capture the full political influence of billionaires who, in addition to personal donations, also steer money to favored candidates from related corporations and organizations. Billionaires are among the ultra-wealthy Americans who control corporations through their extensive stock holdings. Many corporate giants have been distorting the upcoming midterms, ATF pointed out, by spending tens of millions to help GOP candidates who have vowed to defend the special tax breaks for the top 1% get elected, including 144 far-right members of Congress who voted to overturn President Biden's electoral victory. According to the report, 7 powerful corporations, including AT&T, Chevron, ExxonMobil, FedEx, GM, Merck and Ops have collectively given nearly $1.5 million to dozens of election deniers and various Republican PACs and election committees this campaign cycle. The companies demonstrated lack of concern for democracy, ATF noted, likely stems from their desire to keep dodging taxes. In 2021, these firms paid an average federal income tax rate of just 2.7% on a combined $78.4 billion in profits. Notably, Peter Thiel, the co-founder of PayPal, who is worth about $5 billion and openly opposed to democracy, has been spending big on his preferred Republican candidates, but not through the GOP's congressional super PACs. Thiel has so far spent almost $30 million through super PACs, supporting the 2022 senatorial bids of two firms. And employees who share his anti-democratic and anti-tax beliefs, ATF found, adding, J.D. Vance won the Ohio Republican U.S. Senate primary thanks in part to Thiel's $15 million in spending. Blake Masters has a fighting chance in Arizona's GOP U.S. Senate primary in August due to Thiel's $13.5 million in contributions. Another source of billionaire dominance of campaign financing, especially on the Republican side, wrote ATF, are so-called dark money groups, which are not required to disclose the identity of their donors. Some dark money groups, including Club for Growth, which has received $32 million from billionaire Wall Street trader Jeffrey Yes over the years, are notorious for having bankrolled insurrectionist members of Congress like Senator Josh Hawley and Lauren Boebert, ATF noted. According to the report, politically active billionaire Charles Koch has personally donated to either GOP Super PAC this cycle, but his corporation Koch Industries has so far given them a total of $1.75 million. Two of the biggest dark money groups, which do not disclose their donors, are essentially sister groups to the two congressional GOP Super PACs. American Action Network gave at least $26 million to CLF in the 2020 cycle and $18.7 million so far this cycle. One Nation donated $77.5 million to SLF last cycle and has given $16.5 million so far this cycle. The ability of the nation's wealthiest individuals to translate their disproportionate economic power into political clout has increased exponentially since the U.S. Supreme Court's 2010 Citizens United decision eliminated effective limits on campaign contributions. According to the report, billionaires pumped $1.2 billion into the 2020 elections, almost 40 times more than the $31 million they donated in 2010, when the Citizens United rules were first in effect. In the 2020 election cycle, billionaires contributed nearly $1 out of every $10, while making up just 0.1% of all donors contributing more than $200. Billionaires donated almost $240 million to the combined campaign efforts of Donald Trump's two runs for president. Over half came from just one billionaire household, that of magnate Sheldon Adelson, who has since died. Billionaires who are used to buying whatever they want have increasingly dedicated their almost unlimited resources to buying American elections, Frank Clement, executive director of ATF, said in a statement. The problem is what's good for billionaires, including cutting taxes on the rich and corporations. It's bad for working families, said Clement. We need to rein in billionaire political and economic power through campaign finance reforms and tax reforms, such as a billionaire's income tax. Several legislative proposals have emerged to tax the increased value of assets owned by the nation's wealthiest households each year, regardless of whether they sell or keep them, which would ensure that income derived from wealth is taxed more like income earned from work. Biden's plan would raise an estimated $360 billion over 10 years, while Senator Ron Wyden's plan would raise an estimated $550 billion over a decade, and Representative Jamal Bowman's proposal possibly even more. Billionaire-backed Democratic Senator Joe Manchin, however, has joined Senate Republicans in opposing such a measure.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد عودك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم
صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. Welcome back, dear Muslim brothers and sisters. Thanks for being with us. We were practicing page 338, right?
Yes?
Page 48.
Some verses, inshallah, we'll practice.
I want to practice page 591.
Grandma, Muslim is 18.
Go to page 48, everyone.
I'm in.
Go to page 48.
First.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
So we had practiced up to كما علمه الله yes
yes
فليكتب وليملل الذي
Allah
yes.
So we stopped here.
One, two, three. فَلْيَكْتُبْ
فَلْيَكْتُبْ
وَلْيُمْلِلْ
وَلْيُمْلِلْ
الَّذِي عَلَيْهِ الْحَقُّ
الَّذِي عَلَيْهِ الْحَقُّ
وَلْيَتَّقِ اللَّهَ رَبَّهُ
وليتق الله ربه
ولا يبخس منه شيئا
ولا يبخس منه شيئا
I said yes.
So. Yeah.
You change it to Aleph.
Yeah.
The Tanween Fatha. فإن كان الذي عليه الحق
فإن كان الذي عليه الحق
Look, recite with the same voice, okay? With the same rhythm, I mean, okay? فإن كان الذي عليه الحق
فإن كان الذي عليه الحق
سفيها أو ضعيفا
سفيها أو ضعيفا
يحيى يعر بعري making a lot of mistakes with عين
عين عين
اوكي بع تعن شعن محمد
عين عين يحيى
Listen to me. So Hamza, he produces the sound not a. Okay. So this one, look. Safihan aw
da'ifa. Safihan aw da'ifa.
Don't say. Aw. Aw. It means that ayn with waw. It changes the meaning of the Quran.
What
does
it equal?
Huh?
What it means?
I don't know. But it just changes the meaning.
Sure, I mean
okay.
I.
So, أو لا يستطيع أو
لا يستطيع
أي يمل
أي يمل
هو فليملل وليه
هو فليملل وليه
بالعدل.
بالعدل
واستشهدوا
شهيدين
من رجالكم فإن لم يكونا رجلين Hey, pay attention to that aleph. فَإِنْ لَمْ يَكُونَا رَجُلَيْنِ
Ready? So I don't know, and I can't read one of a bunch of
فَإِنْ لَمْ So I will read shortly, okay? Short ones.
قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني نبض
حياتي How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran?
What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's recite the Quran.
فإن لم
يكونا
رجلين
فرجل
وامرأتان
ممن
ترضون
من الشهداء
أن تضل
إحداهما
فتذكر
إحداهما الأخرى
ولا يأبى الشهداء
إذا ما دعوا
ولا تسأموا
أن تكتبوه
صغيرا أو كبيرا
إلى أجله
ذلكم
أقسط
عند الله
وأقوم
للشهادة
وأدنى
ألا
ترتابوا
إلا أن تكون
ما شاء الله
تجارة حاضرة
تديرونها
بينكم
فليس عليكم
ألا تكتبوها
وأشهدوا
إذا تبايعتم
ولا يضار
كاتب
ولا شهيد
وإن تفعلوا
فإنه
فسوق بكم
فسوق بكم
واتقوا الله
واتقوا الله
ويعلمكم الله
ويعلمكم الله
والله بكل شيء عليم
والله بكل شيء عليم
أحسن صدق الله العلي العظيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد سائر صلوات
اللهم صل على محمد
رسالة صلوات
اللهم
صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرج okay do you have any question
Yeah.
What is your question?
My question is, dear Muslims and brother, do you have a problem with Ayn?
Do you have a problem with Ayn?
Yeah.
But sure.
Because we got a student here.
Me too, I have a question.
Yeah.
No.
What this jim that this surah have? A lot. This safa have a lot.
A lot of jim?
Yeah.
Inshallah, we'll because study. Very, very good question. As you see, in this page, we have... We have jim, okay, so many jim we have in some of the parts of the verses, okay, at the middle or after some words, okay, there is a small jim like...
This is the beauty of Quran.
What?
This is the beauty of Quran.
This is the beauty of Quran. those are the flowers?
Yeah, they are cute. Small jim.
Okay, small jim. So they are the babies of the other jims, yeah?
Yeah.
So good. Yeah, of course, they are the babies, okay, but this jim... We have also, for example, meme. We have like la. We have ta. Sometimes we have sali or sala, qali or qala. These things, okay? Yeah. So inshallah, we'll study them. They are the signs of stop.
The beauty of Quran.
Okay?
The key.
The signs of pauses, okay? So they help you understand where should you pause. Mm-hmm. As you're reciting... Where should you pause? Where shouldn't you pause? Okay.
All of that they put a lot in this safa because it's all one ayah.
Yeah. So. Inshallah, we'll study them. Okay, in the coming sessions. But now, let's give a thanks to Xavier International School Network and also IRB English Radio. Inshallah, we'll get back. Stay with us. Recite a salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajah.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools. نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبي لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.